Hey there, foreigners. This is Rohit from BreakingTheBorders.com, home of the ambitious immigrants. Today's guest is a hustler. He hustled his way to starting more than 3 startups. And his latest one is called Agile Entrepreneurs, where he teaches how to validate a product idea in just 4 weeks and eventually build a profitable company out of it. And he is Murali Devarakonda. Murali, welcome.
Thank you, Rohit. Glad to be here.
Very excited to be talking to you today. So, can you give us a little background about yourself? How did you end up in the US and what was your first few years like?
I came here to study January 1st, 1991. I went to Florida Atlantic University and I did my master's in computer science. Chose that university because of friends, because of the beaches, but also because of proximity to IBM. Which was famed for 2 things. One is where the personal computer was born, and it is where the OS2 operating system, you know, in those days, it was a major competitor to Microsoft's Windows. And these two were created there. So as students, we had opportunity to work at IBM. And, you know, I graduated from there, worked there for a few years, and then moved on to Silicon Valley in 1996.
Okay. So fast forwarding, like, at decades, how did you end up with doing what you're doing now?
So in 1999, or rather, I just got desperate enough that I just didn't care about my visa troubles and all the limitations that your visa situation puts on you. And I had been fighting them for like a long time. And in 1999, I said, you know, I'm going to just dive in and do my startup anyway.
So you started your startup on H1? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, the first time. I was still on H1. Worse, my visa was expiring in less than a year after that. And I said, you know, I'm not going to leave this country without ever having tried to do a startup.
Okay. So how can you do a startup on H1? So that is the reason I'm asking is that is one of the biggest questions I get from the listeners that I'm on F1, I'm on H1. Can I really do a startup? So can you tell me a little bit?
Just give you a very short answer. Because it's very easy these days. There are tons of role models out there. Every attorney worth his salt in Silicon Valley knows how to structure your company for that.
Okay.
People in India are coming to the US on B1 visas on their own without a company, without any US company inviting them. They just go to the US consulate, say, hey, I want to go to Silicon Valley, stay at Hacker Dojo and work on my startup, and they get a visa just like that, right? So it's become a lot easier. But even back then, there were role models, a company called iLeverage. Anybody can do it, just do it. Figure it out, talk to the role models. There are plenty of them out there. I can personally connect you guys with, if anybody wants to know more information, they can come to our website. You know what? I might put a link to some information about this as well.
Sure. So do you want to, since it's, you mentioned, do you want to mention what your website is and where people can find this info?
AgileEntrepreneurs.com.
Okay. I will link to the website in the show notes as well. Okay, great. So you started your company on H1 and how did you end up with Agile Entrepreneurs?
Just fast forwarding through my process, the first 1.5 years with all the challenges of learning how to do a startup, talking to people, getting the right information, right advice, you know, kind of what your listeners are probably trying to do now, hoping to get something out of this. I was similarly trying to learn by going all around, talking to somebody who said, I went around asking my friends, hey, who do you know who has done a startup? You know, I need some advice. And I eventually, within a year, I was able to connect with pretty much everybody in Silicon Valley. It's not that hard, right? I was able to meet the stalwarts, all the super successful desi entrepreneurs like Sabir Bhatia, Kanwal Rekhi, B.V. Jagdish, you name it, Suhas Patel, all of them, right? It's not hard.
So do you have an example of any of such relationships that helped you in your company?
Yes. I have to give you a note of warning, though. I'm sitting in this area where there's a table tennis table.
Okay.
And these people are threatening to play.
So is there an example of someone who you connected with, some influencer you connected with, which actually helped you in your business at that time?
Plenty of people. But before I go off on that tangent, as I tend to do, your question originally was how I started Agile Entrepreneurs.
Yes.
So I tried to do the startup that I was doing in 99. Okay. It's in the ride sharing space. And November 99 is when I could actually, you know, eventually it's like, you know, I'm going to just do it. I don't care about the consequences. So I quit my high paying job and dived in, and then spent a year and a half doing it. Then the dot-com crash killed my ambitions. I went back into it in 2005, end of 2004, in fact. And I found that the opportunity was still there. Now it has more appealing to investors. So I spent 3 years building it with a team in India, selling in US. And I made a lot of progress. I made a lot of mistakes, but I also learned a lot.
What was that company called, the second one?
Second time it was still the same thing, same carpooling. I just had a different name for it. This time I called it Ride Station. There were a lot of lessons I learned. I'm not really known to be humble. I'm known for humble bragging. But I will just say, I would give myself a B+ at least on all of that, right? But there are other factors that influence and that get in your way in terms of making you fail. So when people talk about 90% of startups fail, they're leaving out a very important factor. You know, it's kind of like somebody has an advantage and so they succeed and others don't. So if you remove the disadvantages, the 90% will go way, way down. And that's one of the theses behind Agile Entrepreneurs and the 4-week startup.
So, but that was not your experience though, after Ride Station and Commuter, right? So that was not your experience, you're saying.
It was easy and hard simultaneously. The easy part was what I was supposed to do. The hard part was what others were supposed to do. Imagine if this was a class, okay? And in the class, there are 30, 40, 50 students. I'm the one who's, you know, like everyone else is in the A's and B's, and I'm in F because I'm slacking, I'm not doing, I'm not listening. No, I'm in the top 5, top 10. I'm doing everything right. I'm listening, I'm taking notes, I'm doing my homework, I'm working hard. In spite of that, because it's almost like there's a class and then the professor has, like, okay, graders and TAs and other people you need to talk to, but they don't cooperate. The rules keep changing. The rules are different. They tell you one thing, something else happens. So it's an unfair system. It's not an efficient system.
Okay.
And it is easily, very easy to improve this.
Okay. So you are really disappointed by the external factors and how they didn't let you form a successful company in spite of your drive.
That is precisely correct. Yes.
Yeah. So what did you do with it?
Well, I found that the number one source of truth, knowledge, wisdom, and reliable advice I could get was not any of these people that I'm talking about, right? It is your fellow entrepreneurs. And number two, within the fellow entrepreneurs, you really have to underline the fellow entrepreneur, fellow part, because you need people who are what I like to call useful role models. And useful role models, again, underline the word useful, because Sabir Bhatia, Kanwal Rekhi, they're useful mentors, but not useful role models to me. Zuckerberg, Bill Gates, they're not useful role models to me. And this sounds controversial, but only because people are always looking for inspiration. I'm not looking for inspiration. I got that in droves, and so does a typical entrepreneur. What we need is guidance. Okay, inspiration you need until you decide to do something. After that, maybe when I'm in the dumps, I need inspiration.
Yeah. So you need actual on-the-ground mentorship, which tells you, guides you through the weeds, which is what you were
lacking. Don't tell me what killed me. Try and prevent me from dying, you know? The fellow entrepreneurs who are also working on startups, they kind of are facing the same situation you have. Whereas, you know, Kanwal Rekhi, he did it in the 80s. Right? And he did an electronics thing. And I'm doing this. I was first doing this in 2000. Now this is 2015. You know, so it's a very different game. And so people need to reinvent themselves.
I understand. So it was from this disappointment that your company, Agile Entrepreneurs, was born.
That's right.
Okay. So when did you start it? And what was your, like, can you take us through how was the journey since then?
There was this organization called TIE. Right. Now I'm disillusioned and I'm in the company of thousands of other people I've met since then who are kind of disillusioned by TIE. TIE is a great organization. It was started with very egalitarian principles, a very noble charter, and TIE was very helpful to me in 99, 2000. And even from 2003 till 2009 or 10, when I was still involved with TaiCon and volunteering to create the conference, their annual conference, you get to work for like 3 to 4 months alongside all these people, right? Investors, successful entrepreneurs, and so on. It was great, right? But what it was not great for is like, hey, look at the results. Who invested in me? Who helped me out, right? Nobody did, right? People gave me advice. At some point, networking becomes a trope. Advice just becomes tiring. Okay, you need funding or you need somebody to step up and say, I can guide you with this, okay? I don't want to give you money, but I'm going to adopt you. It's like, okay, you do this. Now, people will say, yeah, but if you were really that good, you know, people would have championed you. But then they're making you out to be the odd one. And so, okay, fine, I'll buy that if 95% of other people got it. It's again, it's the same false metaphor they use. It's like in the class, again, I have never been in the less than top 90% in any class, right? So why would you make it sound like I'm the one who's lazy in the class and so I'm the one probably not deserving it? Just because I am not afraid to say it out aloud doesn't mean you then turn it around on me and like there's something intrinsically flawed with me. So this is really the challenge of getting mentorship, advice, help. So I went to Thai. I went to Thai in 2006. And I used to go to Thai all the time. I would just go there to chill. I would go there to talk to the president. So I would go there. And some, you know, whoever was the president, I would talk to him. Or some other people, I would talk to them. Volunteers, employees, I would talk to them. So I went to Raj Jaswa. He was the president then. And Raj, you know, in my volunteering the previous year, TaiCon, I had met him. And I found him very refreshingly, you know, humble and, you know, open to talking. So I proposed to him, hey, why don't we have a forum for entrepreneurs who are bootstrapping to help each other? I want to start. And, you know, we need more guidance. And he said, oh, that's a good idea. I wonder why we never thought of it ourselves. He said, why don't you do it? And he proceeded to encourage me to start. And then he said, talk to this guy, charter member. So Thai has this whole hierarchy. And that's part of the problem, by the way. It makes it rigid, you know. They probably meant well. But, you know, over time, it's become a very, very rigid system that doesn't work very well.
Actually, I just realized we didn't tell what Thai is. Can you just give a one-liner about what Thai is?
Yeah, Thai stands for The Indus Entrepreneurs, right? It's basically started by a lot of successful Indian entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley. And now they claim they have chapters all over the world and all that. Personally, I won't be proud of how many chapters I have. I would be proud of how many entrepreneurs I have helped.
I mean, okay.
But they have metrics which are wrong.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah, I'm a part of Thai right now. So I go to their events. So you went to this chartered person and then what happened?
Well, so I was asked to like coordinate with him. He just said, oh, you run this, but like talk to this guy. Long story short, it completely got twisted out of shape into something else and
diluted.
There were all kinds of questions, I would say, irrelevant, which took center stage, like, should we offer food or not? Should we offer ticket or not? Like, can we just get to the basics of it and then keep it free form, right? So, again, it's a mindset. It's a generational thing. If we just talk to each other, we can solve 90% of the problems ourselves. Even the money problem we can solve ourselves. Because why do you need money? If you can figure out, you need money to spend on things. Well, a lot of things we can create ourselves, right? You need a developer. Well, someone else is a developer, you know. He can guide you. And I can learn and write code.
Got it. So, you were not able to successfully launch in Thai.
I was able to launch. In spite of that, I was able to launch. But then I ended up having to go to India on a visit. So I had to go there to fight fires. By the time I came back, I basically asked someone else to run it. And he kept running, but, you know, the passion was gone. And he was a nice guy, but, like, somehow it just didn't keep up. And I guess the overall format changes, you know, affected it over time. So we just shut it down.
Which year was this?
2006.
Okay.
So I decided I was just going to do it outside on my own, right? And that's what I did. I did it kind of haphazardly here and there, occasional meetings. But in 2007, I launched this in a very public way as someone in my LinkedIn profile quite eloquently wrote about it. This was after a big pitching event that was a two-day coaching and pitching event for entrepreneurs.
So you actually launched, did an event, and at the end of the event, you launched this.
There was an event I was part of. I just co-tailed on it. And then I announced there, it's like, hey, I'm starting this.
What event was that?
This was called Startup Epicenter. There was a two-day coaching and pitching event. They coached you and then you pitched and then you got some advice. And I got written up on VentureBeat about this.
Oh, okay. I see. So you actually pitched Agile Entrepreneurs as a part of that?
No, Right Station, the other one.
Oh, the Right Station. Okay.
And then after that, I said, I'm starting an organization for entrepreneurs to learn from each other called Agile Entrepreneurs.
Okay, so it was in 2007?
Seven
that you launched Agile Entrepreneurs.
And legally incorporated in 2008.
Okay.
That's another interesting story behind it.
What is the interesting story?
So I used to have a meeting every Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'll give some credit to Rajaswa for this. Man, can't believe I'm giving so much credit. But it's due. It's due. You give it where it's due. So Raj, I met him in another event. By the way, the guy who used to run Agile Entrepreneurs in my absence for the 2-3 months in 2006, he had another organization. So as part of that, he would invite speakers to come and talk about their experience.
What was that organization?
It's a Rajasthani organization. He was Rajasthani. His name is Vinod Jain. His company is called Namo Solutions. Organization is called RANA, Rajasthan Association of North America. So he was the president of RANA, I think. So one of them was Rajaswa. And he talked about his story. And one of the things that stuck with me, there were a couple of things that were very valuable. But one of them, which was relevant to this, was you need to have a meeting, just to recap what happened. So they used to meet every Saturday, the co-founders. After coming to my meetings for several months and every Friday, some of the people started trying to act like they owned the meeting themselves and they tried to hijack it. So that's when my attorney advised me that if I want to have any control over it, I need to incorporate it. So I chose to incorporate it, but I also chose to incorporate it as a for-profit company, not a non-profit. Partly because I've also been part of a non-profit organization and that gets messy in ways you can't imagine. You want to have dictatorial control about your startup until it becomes up and running. It's like a parent being dictatorial when it comes to children.
So when you incorporated, your status and all was clear? You already had your green card or citizenship by then?
So I got my green card in 2001. I was able to stay because a law was passed in 2000. And to some extent, we did contribute towards that, the organization I was part of. The law was called AC-21. There were four major provisions. Two of them were introduced by us. So one was H-1B visa. If you are on H-1, you had 6 years maximum.
Yeah.
And after that, you had to leave.
Yes.
Now it's not the case. Now, as long as you are in a job, you can keep extending forever.
If you have a green card,
job
is fine.
And green card. If you have a green card petition pending, you can keep extending H1 forever.
So that was the part of the change in 2001.
One of the four.
Oh, okay. Oh, I didn't know that. I thought it was always there.
So that was the thing, right? I had to leave.
Yeah.
I had green card pending, everything, but I still had to leave because my visa was going to expire. Second was when you get a new job and you want to change into the new job with an H-1 visa. There was no such thing as H-1 visa transfer. You had to apply for a new H-1 visa, wait 3 months, which was the average amount of time in those days, and then transfer. And so we replaced that with H-1 visa transfer, which means once you file for a transfer, you get a receipt, you can start working for the new employer. A lot of times people would get a new job, but they'll still have to leave the country because not enough time to process.
Oh, I have to say personally thank you. Then I'm a beneficiary of both of them.
You have to thank the entire organization and all the people involved with it. I was one of the cogs in the wheel.
Yeah, absolutely. So you started your Agile Entrepreneurs and you incorporated it in 2008 because you were losing control, right? So from 2008 to now, we can either do one of the two things now. So you can either talk about your journey or you can talk about the Agile Entrepreneur methodology itself. So which one do you want to do?
I think we should get to the methodology. All right, cool. So what Agile Entrepreneurs aims to be, the mission of Agile Entrepreneurs, just like my business card says, make your own mistakes, learn from mine, The Agile Entrepreneur's philosophy is we are the least exclusive club for entrepreneurs in the world.
Yeah.
Least exclusive. We are proud of being the least exclusive, just like Y Combinator is proud of being the most exclusive, or IIT, MIT, Harvard, and Stanford are proud of being most exclusive.
So you're saying you will let anybody with a vision and passion in?
I'm saying something even more profound. I don't have the power to say no to somebody for somebody who wants to join Agile Entrepreneurs.
Okay.
They just have to qualify. The qualification is simple. Do you have a startup? Are you the founder?
Mm-hmm.
And are you trying to build a product?
Okay.
In high tech.
So what I'm doing now is completely me, right? Like I'm podcasting and I'm talking to immigrant entrepreneurs and I'm putting it on my website and I'm doing everything by myself, but it's not high tech by definition. So I would not qualify.
Even if it was high tech, if it was not a product, it wouldn't qualify.
Oh, it's not a product. No, it is an online product at the end of it, right?
How do the users interact with it?
So they listen to it and gain inspiration and actual advice.
So how is it different from posting a video on YouTube? Where's the product?
Posting one video on YouTube is not going to cut it, right? So people want to keep coming back, learning about new things and stuff like that. So I interact with my listeners and try to ask them what they want to learn and try to find people who can help them with that.
But is it more than mere comments under your video, or is it something that requires actual software, actual productization of it? Is there a structure to that?
It is a communication with me. I call people, I talk to them in real life and things like that.
But my instinct tells me there isn't a product yet. I haven't found it.
Okay.
Based on what you told me.
Okay.
But maybe there is. It's very easy to turn that into a product.
Okay.
You can say, yeah, but I want to build a collaboration platform with my listeners. So it's really a 1 minute conversation. And I will leave it to you. The discretion, I will give you that discretion, right?
So, okay. So, Agile Entrepreneurs is the least exclusive club. Then what? What else?
Number one, yeah. And then, so we are all founders. Number two, the idea behind it is we collaborate with each other to help each other. So, Agile Entrepreneurs' mission is like, it's structured as three circles. There's the inner core. We call it the founder core. Then outside it, there is an inner circle. The inner circle is people who are not entrepreneurs, but who like to work with startups, who are passionate, maybe interns in the summer, somebody moonlighting because he's bored with his day job at HP or Infosys or something in India. You know, I had people coming to work with my team in India. You know, we were called Crystal Ball back then in India. And I had people from Microsoft and, you know, Infosys and other places.
Okay, understood. So understood the structure and what do you do with it, right? Like, how does it, when you go down to the weeds, coming to the specifics?
We have a meeting every Friday evening. You know, typically we used to meet around 5. You know, times have changed a little bit, half an hour here, 1 hour there. But at the end of the day, it's always on Friday. This was the bone of contention, by the way, with the rebels in 2008. I'm not going to go into that, but like they wanted another day and it's like, no, Friday.
So everyone is an entrepreneur doing their own thing from Monday to Thursday or Monday to Friday afternoon. And they're coming together on Friday because of Agile Entrepreneurs and they're doing what?
They're answering three questions. The three questions are, what did you do last week? What are you going to do this week? And what problems do you face? Right? Have you heard of Scrum?
Scrum,
like
yeah.
Agile method. And what do you do in your daily Scrum? What did you do yesterday? What are you going to do today? And what problems do you have?
Yeah.
So this is the same thing, again, applied to entrepreneurship, learning from some of the advice I got from Raj Jaswa. Applying that here. So every time you hear me speak about something, it's never just what you hear on the surface, okay? You can trace it back to a core value, a core principle. In fact, a big part of my coaching, I ask people to start with values, principles, philosophy, and then vision. And then get down into strategy. It will be a long time before we'll get down into the weeds of what are you going to code.
So you guys discuss about that also in Agile in Friday meetings?
No, but it comes through.
Okay.
Because I'm the one driving the vision, right? It's my values will be reflected in the organization I'm creating, right? The people who left, we had a difference of opinion, right? There were others who said, oh, you're just a meetup. No, we are not just a meetup. It may have taken me 9 years to get here, but we are a product. We've always been a product. It's just, we just didn't get a chance to build that product, right? This is why I'm also pretty flexible about someone saying, I am thinking of a product, but I'm not ready yet. Anyway, so coming to the weeds of it, the agenda of the meeting is this. But before the agenda, right, the philosophy behind that is simple. Everywhere you go as an entrepreneur, throughout the week, every day, repeatedly, people will ask you, oh, what's your idea? Oh, who's the customer? Did you do this? Did you do that? Oh, I would never use it. That sucks. Oh, yeah, you guys are useless. You already lost the market. You're too late. You're too early. You're too big, too small, this, that. Everybody will second guess your vision and nobody has a clue. I'm even talking about successful people. Even they don't have a clue. Remember the phrase we use, useful role models?
Yeah.
It's because you can get bad advice from anywhere.
So even someone who has been there, done that, successful, can get it wrong is what you're saying.
In fact, more likely that they will get it wrong. You know why?
Mm-hmm.
People who have failed before are better than people who have succeeded before. Because the failed people are hungry. And the successful people have multiple problems. One, okay. They have money, so they're not hungry. Number two, they have money, so they think they're smart. Money makes you think you're smart. And that's not necessarily true.
It's true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Smarter. People tend to think, oh, I made money, so I must have become smarter. No, you just probably followed a path. You faced some resistances and you had your pluses and minuses. But to extrapolate from one person's successful experience to what works for everybody is really hard thing.
Yeah. So entrepreneurs are listening all these comments throughout the week.
So you don't need another place where we will shit on you again. Right? You don't need that. Sorry for the French and Hindi and whatever. But this is not about the vision. At Agile Entrepreneurs, we don't challenge your vision. We will challenge it to some degree, but more to just make sure you know what it is.
So what do you do instead?
Execution.
Execution.
Execution. Okay. I don't care that you're going to build something that a ladder to the moon.
So it's all about getting down to the weeds.
Yeah, you told me you're going to do this. Okay, tell me what you're doing.
Okay.
Don't keep telling me the same story every week and every month for years.
Is that it? It sounds very simple.
Doing a startup is simple.
Yeah. So every week, everyone gets together to talk about what they've actually done on the ground.
Now, that's the meeting part. The whole coaching part, the model, the four-week startup, it's a product. It's an online collaboration platform. I coach. I do classes on it. There's a structure to it. But this is the core philosophy. If you can't reduce something to its core simple philosophy, as I just did, then you really don't know what you're doing. You know, the most powerful things can be reduced to a core, simple philosophy behind it.
So actually, on second thoughts, I feel like it's a great simple philosophy also, because I've done this for the past 2 months, you know, trying to get a podcast out. For the last 1.5 months, I just slacked. I just talked about this vision, mission, and I didn't do anything. And in the last 2 weeks, I said, okay, I'm going to get on the ground and do it. And since I've done it, in 2 weeks, I was able to launch it.
Exactly. I'll give you a metaphor for that. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, the metaphor for this is, I've seen hours turn into years. I'm not even talking about other people. I'm talking about myself. Okay? I've come back and done the same carpooling business 3 times. Let's just say 3.5, because right now, I'm in the process of getting this to market again. Right? Hours, right? You slack for an hour a day here or there, and then before you know it becomes a habit, and those hours will turn into days, and now you won't have time to come back and do it another day. So you postpone for weeks and months, and then you lost the strength, energy, opportunity you had, and then before you know it, years have gone by. So
I get that. You have to do on the ground things, and you have a guidepost, which is your vision, and you are every week measuring how close you are, or what did you actually do to get closer to that guidepost, right? And how do you make money out of it? You said it's not a non-profit, so how do you make?
Right. And there are multiple ways I explored. It's not that hard at all.
What is your biggest source of revenue?
Can I just say how I solve the problem before I make
sure,
the money?
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah, go ahead.
Because that is where a lot of startups go wrong.
Okay.
Making money is not the hardest part.
So you're trying to answer how does getting together once a week and talking about real stuff solve a startup's problem of building a successful company?
Right.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Right. Because I like to divide entrepreneurs in this category into two kinds. The first derivative entrepreneur sees everything as a money-making opportunity. That's not me, but there's nothing wrong with that. That's what drives them. They see, I can get this for 10 cents here and sell it over there for $1 and I'll make money. I'll build a supply chain, get it from India, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Good for you. So second derivative is more about, I see a problem. I see an opportunity. I can do this. So it's, we're not as awesome as inventors are, but we like to at least follow in their footsteps of solving something big, solving a problem with technology, and then making money from it. So the first derivative is the solution.
So let's start with how you solve the problem.
How you solve the problem, right? So how you solve the problem is, first step is like connect with your peers. It's like you're in this college called entrepreneurship, startups, and you hang out with your classmate more than your dad who went to civil engineering 25 years ago, right? Who do you learn from? How many times?
So I'm a part of Agile Entrepreneurs, and let's pretend I have a tech startup and I'm coming to you for help and you are helping me out, right? So I come to these meetings every Friday, and how are you solving my problem?
So it's kind of like Scrum, which exposes the problem and then it connects you with people who can help you solve the problem.
Okay.
Right? So Scrum doesn't solve problems. It just exposes problems. And number two, it connects you with people, you know, in the room, who might be able to help you solve the problem.
How do you expose the problem in the first place?
When I ask you, hey, what did you do last week? And then what are you going to do this week? And then what problems do you have? Well, we also add, if you don't know what problems you have, we will help you find them.
Okay.
Or these days, I've rephrased that question in a completely different way, which is based in terms of the four-week startup methodology. So let me dive right into it.
Okay.
Last week is not enough of a time. Four-week period is what we want to consider for any startup. And a week to build something of value to the customer, right? The MVP or whatever you want to call it. Enough for a user or a customer to engage with your product by getting you, the user, to use it and a potential customer to say, oh, if you can do that, then I can pay for it. The potential customer could be an advertiser who's happy because you are able to engage user. The potential customer could be a dad. And the user is a child who's using the toy you built for them.
So can you give an example of the methodology implementation, you know,
to get you to that success?
Yes, yes.
Right? So the methodology is simple, right? So you have users and you have customers, and your product has to engage with them. So the way you do that is by acquiring users and monetizing through this thing called engagement, which is a fulcrum. So you have to be able to balance them both. And that's really it, right? Now, the companies that have done it well have succeeded. Companies that don't, you know, struggle a lot. Even so, I cannot give you examples of, are you familiar with Friendster?
No, I'm not.
See, that's the sad part. They would have been the 270 billion company. So they were a social network, started in 2003.
Okay.
And it was the first one that I know. Everybody was able to access it. Even though Facebook was launched around the time, it wasn't open to the general public until 2007, long after Friendster died. So what happened with Friendster, they got funding from Kleiner Perkins and Sequoia, top engineers, but their problem was they had a lot of users and they had a lot of customers. And then months after that, they pretty much died.
It's hard to believe that it happened.
Oh, it happens all the time. So if you're getting users, so imagine you have a VP of sales whose job is to get revenues, sell ads. There's a VP of marketing whose job is to find ways to get users, sign up, user acquisition, right? And they're both very successful. But you forgot to tell them one thing. What is the reason for these users and what is the reason for these revenues? And they are now out of sync. What happened is one day they looked at the logs and they found, this is embarrassing to even say, even I'm embarrassed. One day they found out that most of the users, well, they had advertisers in the USA paying them millions for, you know, whatever that price demographic of 13 to 25 or whatever, right? And they had users in Philippines. Advertisers were paying them for eyeballs in USA, and all the users were in Philippines. It's like a TV show or your radio show. Imagine your audience is, you know, basket weavers or some grandma sitting at home in India. I don't know. Maybe they might even be okay with these stories, but like completely irrelevant, right?
Yeah,
so they're gone because these things take time to turn around. Even in a startup, Even in ABC.
So the moment that advertisers realize that they are not reaching their target customers, they pull their plug.
The moment Friendster realized, that's the more embarrassing. Friendster didn't know.
Yeah.
The company itself didn't know that. And when they found out, it was a little too late to turn around.
What is an example of someone who did it successfully, and maybe not Friendster level, but maybe someone through who came through your workshops or things like that? Right?
I was not from my workshop. Okay. My favorite entrepreneur is the founder of, one of the co-founders of iFood.tv.
Okay.
iFood.tv. It's a video recipe platform.
Mm-hmm.
And it launched around the time YouTube launched, you know. So they built their own video platform. Back then, YouTube wasn't big and it wasn't well known.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so you go online and you go to iFood.tv and you watch recipes for cooking various kinds of dishes. Right? So this is entirely based on advertising, or at least back then. Now they've become much bigger and diversified. And by the way, he started his company, Vikrant Mathur. He started it while he was on H-1 visa.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yep. And he got himself a green card through his own thing. And during that time, he was working in a startup full time. His co-founder was in New York. So, in many ways, I would say they are like a fantastic role model for most entrepreneurs.
So, what is a definition of success?
First, a definition of failure. Success is not failure. That's the definition of success.
Okay.
All right. So it's not a failure to sell a company for around 50 million. Yahoo is not a failure for a typical bootstrapping entrepreneur. So you got to have a framework, a reference context to talk about. So if I'm sitting with Bill Gates and Zuckerberg, you know, so Yahoo is a failure, right? Comparing Yahoo with Google, it's a failure.
Mm-hmm.
But even Friendster is a success by my standard, because he made $4 million. And he had a brand, he built something, and it was top 50 companies even afterwards for many, many years after that, right? So, so that's still a success. So most people will take, you know, so we're all working here in Silicon Valley for $10,000 a month, okay, average, right? 10, 15, 20, whatever. HackerDojo, go around HackerDojo, you'll see 400 people, you know, many of them are, you know, struggling to make ends meet because they quit their jobs, and now, you know, startup is something that sucks money like nobody's business. So how do they survive, right? So for them, success would be if they can sell their company for 100 million, 100,000, 200,000, 500,000.
Yeah.
If the company starts making 5-10,000 a month, that's success too.
Got it. So it doesn't matter. So what you're saying is that you're not giving a definition of success. You're saying you're encouraging people to define success, and it could be very simple, is what you're saying.
I'm giving them a comparison using the product that you're passionate about, right? So if you had a job that you're hating or bored with, and then you went and created a product company that makes you the same $10,000 you are making in your day job, that's success. Also, I'm talking about success of the entrepreneur, not the startup. And I want to be very clear. I don't care about the startup. I care about the entrepreneur. We care about the entrepreneur. So there are many startups that succeeded where the entrepreneur didn't get anything and others, right? So
you
want to make sure we focus on the entrepreneur, empower them to succeed for themselves.
Okay.
So the bare minimum level is a lifestyle business, right? Somewhere between 100,000 to 500,000 I can make a year, and I can support a lifestyle. The second degree of success is an SMB, a small to medium-sized business. This is the kind of company that gets into the Inc. Magazine 500 fastest growing startups list. You know, there's like making 1 million to 20 million in revenue. But how many of them have you seen go on to become high growth VC type startups? Close to zero.
Yeah.
So those numbers are comparable. The so-called failure rate of overall startups, which never succeed, compare that with successful SMBs, which never become those VC funded high growth startups. So they both have something in common there, right? Very high, very, very low chance of getting all the way there. But what has a very high chance of success is building a lifestyle business. But it is not sexy. And it is not what VCs want.
Yeah.
So if you let everything be defined by VCs on how you should think, you are doomed to begin with.
Yeah. So you talked about two kinds. I saw that there was a third one out there. So you want to put it out there also?
Third one is high growth venture style.
Which is 10 million plus.
Oh, 10 million is for...
10 million or above is what it is.
Well, the unit of a high growth VC style startup is a number of millions of dollars.
Got it. So you are saying the definition of startup or success could be as simple as building a lifestyle business. And that is, as you rightly pointed, it's not sexy, but that could be, that is not why someone quit their job and founded a startup in the first place. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely. They also didn't quit their job, so they could get divorced. They could lose their house. They could go bankrupt. They could be depressed. And they could actually lose their career.
Yeah.
I don't think they did it for that reason as well.
I see what you're saying. So you are better off doing a lifestyle business than not doing anything.
Right. Yeah. And there is also a good news beyond that. There are two ways to do a lifestyle business. That is the beauty of focusing on the big picture. If your ultimate goal is to make a $1 trillion high growth VC startup, the best, smartest way for most of us is not to focus on that. It's counterintuitive because it will then make you do all the song and dance routine that everybody makes you do in Silicon Valley. It's like, I want to become Shah Rukh Khan. Or maybe, you know, so, you know, I want to become the most successful. Then your entire, most people will never get funding.
Okay.
You will spend all your time writing executive summaries, elevator pitches, and improving on them.
Okay.
Okay. Again, a time for a little bit of humble bragging. I'm a good speaker. My English is very good. I'm a good writer. I know how to edit shit. Okay. And I had to edit like thousands of times my presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And I spend months and months, all every time I talk to any angel, VC, any of this kind, all they can do is just, no, go, edit your thing, send it again, do a pitch. How many times do I have to do this? It doesn't matter. Again, Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook, the best example. This is a useful role model because this happened when he was in his early days. People know a lot about if you read the book, Facebook Effect. Facebook, you know what was their first round VC valuation?
I have no idea. 10 million?
100 million.
Oh.
First round VC funding. First round VC funding. Meaning, VCs are giving the money saying, okay, you're valued at 10 million, 100 million already.
Yeah.
First round. First time a VC gave the money. This was after the VC chased Zuckerberg for months and months and months.
Got it. So what you're saying is that if you focus on execution and engagement and focusing on the users and customers, you don't need to pitch to that VC. Either if you're really off the charts successful, the VCs will come to you. And if you're not off the charts successful, you built a profitable small business anyway.
Now, do the pitching to the VCs, do the whole thing, but minimize the amount of time you do that. And that's not your primary focus. Because, hey, VCs will, 90% of us, unless we went to Stanford or Harvard, unless our uncle is a VC or our brother or cousin is a successful entrepreneur, it's really unlikely that somebody will just write you a check for no reason. And that happens. But the people who get funding for no reason are the people I just said, right?
Like to say, we start with defining the users, defining the customers, and focusing on the engagement, defining success, and executing.
Yeah. Let me rephrase and summarize it in a slightly different way. We call it the 4-week startup go-to-market strategy, right? So again, people focus a lot on the vision or product strategy. You build products based on features in mind. I'm telling you, build products based on thinking about activities a user or customer wants to perform. So we have three words we use, three words, and we create an acronym from that. The 4-week startup is based on milestones, activities, and plans. MAP. So the map. That's the map. That's the 4-week startup go-to-market strategy map, GTM map. Okay. The map is you identify a milestone. You know, what would define that success for your product and business? What kind of engagement levels, what kind of monetization would allow you to say, I'm on the path to a successful lifestyle business if I fail? If I succeed, I can get VC funding and grow this into a big business, right? So that is your milestone one. That is called traction. That is called product market fit. Milestone one is traction, product market fit that is fundable by a VC. And if you fail to do that, you will still be able to turn this into a lifestyle business if that's all you want. Number two, activities are what you engage the users with. So a unit of engagement is an activity. Don't build your product by features, build your product by activities. So take any product and slice it, describe it in terms of number of features, or you can describe it in terms of activities that users can do with it. And number three, strategy. How do I take these activities and build something, get the engagement levels I need month by month or every 4 week period, and to get to that milestone in, say, 3 months? One of my friends who was an engineer straight out of college when I first started working with him, a few years later, he started a company. And
what company is it?
AKRITIV. Might be out there if you look it up. 3 months to build it and launch, 2 years to sell the company. Which is the other thing to keep in mind. Not everything is VC fundable, but a lot of companies can be sold. If you build them right, the lifestyle business, you can sell it off for 5 million, 10 million, 2 million, or the acquiring company can make you a VP. My friend became, from an engineer, he became vice president of engineering in a public corporation.
So what was your way to monetize your company in the past?
So all I needed to do now is to put this online in an online collaboration platform. But until I go online and attract users and spread the message and empower them, with 500 people, you don't become the world's most exclusive. They will be able to go from nothing to getting structured guidance to figure out their own go-to-market strategy, their own milestone, and then get a community support. And then the ways to monetize it include connecting with them online, providing information. But more importantly, I want to monetize not the entrepreneurs, but the outer orbit.
Yeah, I would be watching out for it. I'm looking forward to seeing this model come true, right? So, and
good. You can. Starting this Friday, we will be launching our first activity. And if you want, we can put you in our beta users.
Absolutely. I would want to be.
Okay. All right. We can see if that can be done. You have to have a product, though. So we should talk about your productization.
Sure. Absolutely. Good. Are we good? Anything else you want to mention?
I'll just spread the word. Agile Entrepreneurs is the organization. What we teach is a 4-week startup. You know, there's going to be an online collaboration platform which we are launching, but it will take time before it's mature enough to be fully fleshed out and functional. But, you know, we have classes and workshops and seminars. So I'm here at Hacker Dojo. Hacker Dojo is a great place to hang out.
So you want to say one line what Hacker Dojo is? Most of the listeners don't know, actually.
Hacker Dojo is hackerdojo.com. That's the website. And they're a non-profit organization. That's a co-working space for hackers, techies, robot builders, laser cutters, and entrepreneurs.
Yeah, perfect. Great. So we can find you at Hacker Dojo. So if someone wants to connect with you online, what is the best way to do it?
Just email me, Murali, at agileentrepreneurs.com or anything at agileentrepreneurs.com.
Okay. I will put that in the show notes. So I just want to say one thing. And when I was doing the research, I read one of your recommendations on LinkedIn or wherever, on one of the testimonials, which said, at first, when Murali talks, you think there is a lot of buzzword fever, but he knows what he's talking about at the end of it, right? And I actually went through the same journey in the 1 hour that I'm sitting with you. Like, you started with a lot of words, but at the end of it, I felt like, oh my God, like, there is a lot of depth to it, and you know exactly what you're saying, and there is a lot of research and rigor behind everything that you say, right? So I'm really thankful for that.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us, Murali.
Thank you for tuning in. To get updates on latest episodes, make sure you subscribe with your email by going over to breakingtheborders.com. If you know anyone good as a guest, shoot me an email. I will reach out to the guest, get hold of them, and ask them all the questions that you have. My email is rohit@breakingtheborders.com. Thanks again, and have an amazing day.